From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Okay, so bear with me. If the Force has awakened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the movie's going to be called Star Wars The Force Has Awakened.
Yes.
Then... ergo, the Force has been asleep.
Asleep, yeah.
Somehow. So this is something, it's going to be something new that we haven't seen in the previous six movies that no one knows about and has had no effect to this point. And my guess, midichlorians.
Really?
The midichlorians in Star Wars wake up, finally, in episode 7, and all the creatures that aren't affected by the Force... they have to save everybody else because the midichlorians turn against us. So the whole movie is just going to be about Watto from episode 1. You build your own republic.
Skywalker, what are you talking about?
I got pod races to run. You guys, you go rebuild your own Jedi Knights. I'm busy. Hey, it's the Dice Men come up on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm Trent.
And I'm Mark.
And coming up tonight...
we have... the fabulous Steve Jackson Games interview that you've been waiting for from PAX, where we confront them...
shirt front.
...about all things Steve Jackson-y. Let's not give away any more. It's such a good interview. We're also going to talk about Gamergate. Just a little bit.
Yep.
We've got so much news to talk about. Everything's been happening since we've been away at PAX. All that and a lot more tonight.
You know, if there's one thing that we really care about here, apart from board games on The Dice Men Cometh, it's community.
Yes.
And togetherness. And the love of our fellow man. And nothing explains that more than heavy metal. They were the hottest thing in metal for a time, and they just kind of fizzed out, and now they can't stand each other. System of a Down! Jet right. Pilot! That starts us off this evening on The Dice Men Cometh, your friendly neighbourhood geekery show. Board games and card games is what we talk about here. And, lots to talk about tonight.
There's so much happening in the world of board games at the moment. And in the world generally.
But we should do everything in its proper order and, not get ahead of ourselves. And the most important things first. Mark, what have you been playing lately?
What have I been playing? Look, I want to reach back just a couple of weeks because I didn't have much of a chance to talk about it. To talk about one of the new hotnesses, Alchemists.
Oh, right. Yeah, so
I wanted to revisit it again.
Alchemist was fresh.
Alchemists.
Plural.
Yes, right. Because if you make the mistake like me and go and look for the app and you type in Alchemist, you get in all sorts of trouble. Next thing you've got the DEA on your door wondering what are you doing with their gold supplies, okay? So Alchemists from CGE, Czech Games Edition.
We played this at, or you played it anyway.
Yeah, so I played half a game at PAX and I'm still can't stop thinking about it.
Wow. Okay.
So Czech Game Editions, who obviously famously brought Vlada Chvátal to the world. This is a new designer for them, Matus Kotry. So... first question is...
That's an appropriately stupid name. That's fantastic.
Look, the question that comes to mind at first is this the new Vlada?
Yeah.
Which is very exciting.
Is Matus the new Vlada?
That's right.
The question on everybody's
that's
list.
That's right. So Alchemists from CGE and Matus Kotry, 2 to 4 players, around about 2 hours, came out, of course, to much fanfare in 2014 at Essen. So very, very new. I'm not even sure even if it's available yet in Australia, but of course... the top hot PAX team, led by Melissa, did get a copy, arrived in Melbourne on, I think, Friday afternoon, was unpacked overnight and made it out on the floor on the Saturday.
And oh my God, this board game, it just does your head in looking at it in terms of components and lots of little fiddly bits of cardboard because there is so much going on. Every player has their own little personal shield.
Super duper screen, yeah.
With a shelf thing that hangs off it and an inverted cardboard pyramid of little circular slots that you're putting alchemical ingredients into to try and mix up. What is going on in this game?
Look, to put it bluntly, what you're discovering in this game is the true nature of the universe. In under 2 hours. That's pretty good.
Oh, good. I'm glad we got that sorted.
So what you're really doing, it's quite funny, actually, because it is actually a deduction game.
Hmm.
And, of course, today I spotted the article on the interwebs that says, this game is broken because once you've worked out the ultimate strategy of how to get to the maximal deduction phase, then it's the same game over and over and over and over and over again, and every good player will make exactly the same move over and over and over again, and it'll be a tie.
Are they right?
No, not at all. Well, someone pointed out, put down the, you know, in a follow-up post, of course this was Board Game Geek, that, look, yes, you could argue that if you played every single game to the optimal strategy with the optimal layout of cards and blah, 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 then potentially you could make the exact same moves every game.
Mm.
But hey, who plays games like that anyway? And if you're out there, I don't want to play games with you.
But this is played with a computer, like it's played with an app that you need, an iPad or some kind of...
Well, no, the thing is, you can play it without the app. So what the app does is... there are 8 ingredients. So, like, there's, like, duck's beak, chicken's foot, mandrake root, sparrow, you know, butterfly wing. There's 8...
So, mostly parts of birds.
Yeah. 8 natural ingredients that occur in nature, if you like, you know, and a frog and stuff like that. And what you're trying to work out is each of these components is made up of 3 parts. You've sort of got a red part, a green part, and a blue part.
This is
you've
to do got, with their essence.
Yeah,
somehow.
Yeah, and you've got positive and negative. So it's like basically that the universe is made up of 3 essential things, earth, wind, and fire, of course, from the 70s. And so you're trying to work out what the mix of earth, wind, and fire is in each of these 8 things. That is essentially the game.
I can tell you there's a lot of wind in here right now.
And so what the app is doing is the app takes 2 components that you compare, and it tells you what you get when you add those 2 components together.
Right.
And that then tells you what those things aren't made of. So so then you've got to compare other things, and eventually you work out what they are made of, and that's the game. And so you're working out each thing, and you're publishing your treatises, I think they're called, your theses, and gaining reputation, and basically reputation is the victory points of the game.
Wow. My head's just exploding at this whole... because I watched you try to tackle this.
Yes.
I did not have the energy at this point in PAX, and it took you a good 2 hours to get one turn
into it. It was a little bit clunky. It took us a while. Good friend of the show, Aos, hats off to Aos, who did a fantastic job explaining this game to me. The problem was, you know, we broke into conversation about halfway through. We had probably an hour conversation in the middle of the explanation. That's why it took so long. But I lost my train of thought. But
It's good, I think, is what you're trying to
say.
Yeah,
look, you know, there's a lot of bits. It is that sort of medium weight, which I really like.
Okay.
So there is some thought to it.
Do you think this is going to be the gift that keeps on giving once you get over the learning curve?
Look, I think so, and got my train of thought back. What I was going to say was
good.
So you don't need the app. You can play the game without the app, but, and it's a big but, like mine, if you don't have the app, you need a person to be essentially a game master with the pyramid that has what all the things are. You show him those 2 cards, and he'll say, you make this.
So you need someone to look after the giant decoder ring.
Exactly. Which, if you have the app... you don't need someone, obviously. So it's a much better thing to do.
That's
a free app to download.
That's going to be your job.
The Dakota Ring Queen.
The Alchemists.
Yeah, look, it's great. I can't wait to play an actual full game. Check Game Editions if you're listening. I'll send you my address later for the review copy.
You can't do that. You can't shill on the radio
I know they don't listen.
And we're going to be talking about exactly that when we get onto the Gamergate stuff.
So that's Alchemists. Trent, what have you been playing?
Well, a game I actually purchased with my own money, thank you very much, so I can say what the bloody hell I like about it, is Dead of Winter. And, I mean, look, all I've been doing basically is just playing Dead of Winter. I've played it a good 4 or 5 times now. And, I was looking forward to it for months and months and months. I think I ordered it in April.
Yeah.
It's finally...
how many weeks did we talk about? When is it coming?
So this is the semi-cooperative zombie survival game. It's this glorious production in the board game. Some of the stock is maybe a little bit thin, but it's a minor quibble because the graphic design is all there. You've got a group goal that everybody is striving to reach, while at the same time everyone's trying to keep the morale tracker up, because if the morale of the group drops down to zero, everybody dies at once, you all lose.
And keep the place clean, of course.
That helps. But at the same time, everyone's got their own secret goals as well, plus someone could be, maybe, a betrayer. You don't know. There's a betrayer card somewhere in the mix, but maybe it's come out, maybe it hasn't, you don't know. So there's this wonderful multiple conflicting goals, and the only people who win, the betrayer wins if everybody else fails, and
they complete their goal as well.
Exactly, and if everybody completes their goal, then it's only those who have managed to complete their secret goal as well. They win. I've won a couple of times. It's all scenario based. Everything plays out quite simply. It's actually a very, very simple game.
Yeah, there's not a lot to it in mechanics wise, but the feel of it, the theme of it, and that Crossroads deck.
Explain the Crossroads mechanic. So, yeah, so basically, because this is Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game.
Yeah, that's right.
And this mechanic is obviously going to be leading into some kind of series, based in different scenarios. I think the next one's going to be like a Space Madness, set on some kind of spaceship.
Yeah, like apparently a 2001 A Space Odyssey or something. Or what was that terrible one with Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh, Event Horizon.
Yeah, that one, something like that.
I've got a real soft spot for that movie.
Have you?
Although it is terrible.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Although I think it's better than Interstellar. But we digress.
Really? I was about to rush off after seeing Tim Martin's review.
You can,
I was about to rush off.
You can save your money there.
Okay. So the Crossroads deck is a very sort of nice thick deck of cards, a lot of cards in it. And before each person takes a turn, the person who's just had their turn draws a Crossroads card in preparation for that next person's turn. And they look to see if there's a triggering condition on the card.
Mm.
And there's so many different things. So it could be if a particular character is out, or if a person moves on their turn and goes to a location, or lots and lots of different things.
We had one the other night where if anyone at the table yawns...
Oh, you're kidding.
No. So it was like a metagame card.
Oh,
if any player sitting around yawns, that activated.
Oh, wow. So... The sort of the person before you is basically sitting on this card, and the whole time you're taking your turn, you're watching them to see if this card is going to trigger. And these cards are basically telling the story of what's happening whilst the group is trying to fulfill their group goal.
What's really surprised me about this is how my family's actually taken to this game. Now, I've got my wife playing this game, my 7-year-old daughter, who we know loves to feed Dad to the zombies.
Yeah, didn't surprise
like
me.
She's all over it. I taught this to my mother.
Yeah, now, you got to tell me about this because I'm intrigued.
We lost, all right?
Yes.
My mother is not the person I would want to be locked up in some kind of, post-apocalyptic colony with, because she was hopeless.
Yeah.
I taught this to my mother, and she got into it. She enjoyed it, all right? So, look, it's a very simple mechanic, and my wife, who's a horror movie fan, but she's not a board gamer at all. She's a horror movie fan, but she explained it, the appeal, this way. It really lets you experience the zombie horror film, because in zombie films, there's always rules, right?
Yes.
The zombies act in a predictable fashion.
Yep, you must shoot them in their head.
Same here. The true problem is the other humans.
Yep.
The horror that lies within.
What's been explored with the Walking Dead this season, really, is how bad people can actually be to other people, disregard the fact that there's the Walking Dead walking around,
so
dead.
That's what we've been playing lately on the Dice Men Cup.
Ah, man. that game just does it for me.
Well, we're going to play it again tonight after this.
I know,
this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And anyone who's followed our Twitter stream will just see, we've just been tweeting madly about it. We've been sounding off to the designers. And in fact, excitingly, we are going to be interviewing one of the designers in the next couple of weeks. I'm very excited about that.
John Gilmore is his name?
Yes, yeah. John Gilmore. We're going to interview him.
But up next, Andrew Hackard from Steve Jackson Games undergoes a true shirt fronting.
We got him.
Courtesy of the Dice Men Cometh. That's next here on Edge Radio. It's 99.3 FM this evening with the Dice Men Cometh. Some classic television from Marquee Moon. Here on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark on the Dice Men Cometh. Right. Our Prime Minister has failed to shirt front other world leaders, so I think it's up to the rest of us to pick up the slack and the shirt fronting.
We took it on.
Actually, well, what just happened is that we saw that Steve Jackson Games had a booth at PAX, and we were running around doing some recording, so we just kind of had to barge in, didn't
Absolutely.
We? All right, so this is what happened. This is the last time we're going to mention PAX for a little while.
Don't judge us.
So here on the floor of PAX, Andrew Hackard from Steve Jackson Games. Oh, my God, Steve Jackson Games are here. Steve Jackson Games are here. When I heard Steve Jackson Games were exhibiting, I got very excited, and I rock into the floor, and it's a big empty booth. Andrew, what the bloody hell's going on?
Well, what the bloody hell is going on is we're actually here doing outreach more than sales, because there's several great game stores here selling our products, so we don't have to do that work. But we don't have a really good inroads into the Australian market to get an idea of what's selling, what people are playing. So my colleague Randy Schumann and I came down to talk about our store finder program, where stores can put their information in so people can search on it. But primarily our Men in Black program, which is our volunteer demo team, goes out to stores, goes out to conventions like PAX, out to other community events to teach our games, and we reward them with even more games.
All right, so the Men in Black program is something that you're extending through to Australia, and you're actually putting people into Australian retail shops.
Exactly. We have currently 4 Men in Black in Australia. We would like about 40. So we're doing a lot of recruitment, trying to get people interested in it, because it turns out a lot of people just don't know about it. And we would like to have people in Perth and Adelaide and Darwin and Hobart and all over the place, not just Melbourne and Sydney.
Well, look, this is fantastic news, because we often talk on the show about the plight of the modern Australian retailer.
We're so far away from everything here. Costs of shipping play such a big part. You know, we see games that retail for $40 or $50 in the US. We're paying $90 for shipping. It does put an extra burden on your Australian game buyer.
Absolutely. I mean, our Ogre Kickstarter last year, where we were shipping $100 US game to Australia for I don't know how much, but it was a lot.
Yeah, one of our friends actually got one, you know, showed us the box. But yeah, I think it was up around the $200+ to get it here in the end.
I'm willing to believe that, because it's about a 12-kilo game.
That's a monster.
Yeah. And we are at the end of the bloody earth, of course.
Yes, good. And that's the other thing, is we want to see what we can do to talk to distributors to get more games in at a reasonable cost. It is, I mean, shipping is always going to be expensive across the Pacific. There's just no way around that. But if we can get to the point where maybe a distributor can order a full container from Hong Kong and have it shipped directly here instead of shipped to Atlanta, Georgia, and then back across the Pacific, that would help out a lot.
Now, Andrew, it'd be remiss of me not to take this opportunity to chew your ear about two things. Firstly, this guy here that I co-host the podcast with, I met him over a game of Illuminati New World Order. So I blame you for that I'm doing this here today.
But you're still friends? You obviously were not playing that game properly. New World Order was a very good game for us, and it had its time where every now and then we say, should we bring that one back?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, good. Second thing, clearly we are at, if not well past, peak Munchkin.
I disagree.
No, enough. No. Enough with the Munchkin.
There is never enough with the Munchkin. You're trying to talk me out of a job. You understand?
We thought about coming along with a sign. No more Munchkin. No more Munchkin.
We're going to be pulling back a little bit over the next couple of years to make room in our schedule for more new games. Not because Munchkin itself is faltering, it's doing better than it ever has, but it was to the point we're sort of choking out some other things that we wanted to try. We're going to pull back, focus on keeping it in stock. We're doing new development, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
We've got new things on the schedule for it, but we also want to make room for brand new games. Mars Attacks Dice Game is one that's just now shipping.
Yes.
Which is, you are Martians trying to push your luck and conquer cities and take pictures in front of famous monuments. And it's a really fun game. It sort of extends the zombie dice idea of a push your luck game into strategy.
Steve Jackson came out with a really great game a couple of years ago now, Revolution.
Yes.
Where you seem to be embracing the sort of the Euro game genre. And I thought this was going to be a whole new avenue for you, but you haven't explored it a lot. Have you got anything happening in that space?
We have a new expansion called Revolution Anarchy that is just now shipping to stores. It adds backstabbing to Revolution, which it desperately needed. You can throw your friends in jail, throw them into the asylum, cause all sorts of havoc. And one of the spaces is called the Anarchist, which is all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, that sounds like our sort of games.
I'm a little confused about the Car Wars property, because I understand it's getting a dust-off, but first up, there was a re-release of the old version. What the bloody hell's the thinking there?
The thinking on that one was, a lot of people didn't have the old version. Let's make it available to start building up interest, and then next year, we're going to be launching a Kickstarter starter for the 6th edition, which will be the full game, including car design and all the variety of things that you can do with Car Wars that people have been clamoring for 20 years now.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly here, you know, in the land of Mad Max, of course.
I say nothing about that. We're very excited about that. Scott Herring came back to work on Car Wars for us and has been doing great work. We are actually playtesting it in public for the first time at Board Game Geek Con in Dallas at the end of this month.
Okay.
Let me pitch you an Australian-only expansion. Car Wars, Holden versus Ford.
Okay.
It's an Australian thing, yeah. Don't worry.
No, more information will be required off-air, I think.
Car Wars Beyond Thunderdome, could do that one for sure.
All right. Look, Andrew, it's been great talking to you, mate.
It's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you for coming by.
And just on a personal note, it's quite sincerely, I did grow up with Steve Jackson games. I mean, everything from Illuminati, which got me started all the way back in the 80s, and through Toon, New World Order, and lots of titles. So you guys have been a big part of...
You've got a lot to answer for, is what he's saying.
You've been a big part of my life, and just thanks for being, man.
Thank you for coming by. We've been having a fantastic time here at PAX Australia, and we're so grateful the company sent us down here. We've met hundreds of gamers, talked to them about a lot of things, and clearly this is a growing market. We're really looking forward to supporting it more in the future.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
That was the fabulous... So nice, such a gentleman, Andrew Hackard from Steve Jackson Games. Can't say enough nice things about him, particularly the way that, you know, two cocky Australians rocked up, started chest poking him, and he did not know where I was going when all of a sudden I started to launch at him that Steve Jackson Games was to blame for me being stuck with this guy on the other side of the desk.
And I know I come off as a Steve Jackson fanboy, and it's because I am, but I don't forgive the company all of its faults. Mm. And I think as far as the hobby goes, we would all be poorer in the gaming community would be poorer if Steve Jackson Games was not actually in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, we bag Munchkin, but every time you see
it deserves bagging.
Yeah, that's right. Deservedly. Every time you see a chart of top sellers in the board gaming industry, Munchkin is way, way, way up there in the top five. So it is bringing people into the hobby of games.
It's a gateway game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, coming up next...
Speaking
of gateway games, we have got the news, the hot news, half-assed as it is, particularly around what happened at the World Championships of Ticket to Ride. Coming up next.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
And that was Belgian Blues with the Big Scary. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. And now, all the half-assed news that's fit to hear without a theme, because I know you hate it when I do a theme trend.
Oh, thank you. It's so nice of you to be considerate of my feelings.
And now, half-assed news with your favourite host, Trent.
Okay, so we talked about the Ticket to Ride World Championships. There's been some controversy around this. Ticket to Ride, of course, one of the biggest gateway games in our hobby. I've played it once. Can't say I particularly liked it. It's got trains in it, of course. That's a problem.
It's a fantastic game.
The winner of the Ticket to Ride World Championship is the USA's Kenneth Heelfron, and he was declared winner by Days of Wonder Games after Erwin Poelsen, I think you pronounce it, the previous winner, he resigned. Of course, the whole game was being streamed live on the internet, and some of the other contestants and the online community that re-watched this thing suggested that there were shenanigans at play during the World Championship games, and perhaps even some of the other games, if you believe some of the scuttlebutt. I should point out that this whole controversy erupted when a press release came out from Days of Wonder more than a week after the actual game was played. So obviously people with too much goddamn time on their hands have gone back over the video of this event and suggested that Mr. Poelsen may have been cheating. Erwin, for his part, says that he's issued a statement, and he says that he was basically tired after 8 games of Ticket to Ride.
As anyone would be.
Exactly, and that he grabbed cards that he shouldn't have.
Not that I'm defending him, by the way.
More cards than he should have, and no one noticed, because these things are actually played in front of a referee. So the referees failed to actually pick this up. at the time. Irwin says he has decided to resign and return the trophy because he just doesn't want to be known as a cheat. Now, Kenneth, who was declared winner, actually says that Irwin probably just cheated a bunch of times and got caught. And he seems to think that he probably cheated multiple times. And in fact, was actually supposedly wearing a really heavy sports coat with long sleeves in like a really hot room and spent a lot of time with his hands under the table.
My goodness.
Why?
What is going on?
Why would anyone cheat in the World Championship?
Well, the question is, was there a cash prize?
There wasn't. What there was an 8-night trip for two to Asia.
There you go.
With tickets on board there the Orient Express, which I very much hope that Kenneth Heelfron is enjoying right now. So that's the Ticket to Ride controversy. Days of Wonder, I don't think, did themselves too many favours with the way they handled this. They really should have been onto it quicker. The referee should have been a bit snappier.
I was going to say, it's quite amazing that this has been remotely spotted by people on the internet.
Yes.
Who would have thought?
Speaking of the internet erupting in a furore, Fantasy Flight Games, one of the world's biggest publishers of nerd games, has announced a rotation policy for all of its living card games. Oh, God, how do I talk about this and make it sound exciting? How do I convey the rage and terror that I'm feeling with this?
Yeah, look, I did see a bit of traffic on the aforementioned internet about this, and being a former living card game player myself, you know, I sort of scratched my head, but then I went back to sleep.
Yeah, so look, this sort of thing's been happening in Magic the Gathering for quite some time, and look, this affects games, Android Netrunner, Star Wars, Warhammer 40K Conquest. Basically, the math boffins have worked out that if you continue to produce an infinite amount of cards, hundreds and hundreds of cards, into these large card pools that anybody has the ability to draw from when they go into tournament play, the math kills the game, okay? So they've decided to remove this threat by rotating out the older sets of cards. So basically anything that you've bought sort of in the last year or so at some point is going to rotate out and no longer be eligible for tournament play.
Yeah.
You still have the card. You can still play it casually.
Yeah,
course.
That's right. And I guess that, as you said, Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon and all these things, I mean, they've been doing these things, I believe, you know, particularly Magic has, you know, forever. So I guess maybe it's just the fact that it's supposed to be a different type of card game, the living card game, where this has caught people by surprise. I don't know.
It's kind of bugged me a little bit. I'm into my Android Netrunner, as you know. It bugs me that some of the cards that I've, you know, forked out for at some point are going to be redundant.
Yeah.
At some level of play that I'll probably never even get to. So I don't even know really why this is annoying me. The policy as it relates to Netrunner doesn't actually kick in until 2017.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And with Star Wars, it's going to be 2018, and with Warhammer as well. There's a couple of other card games that Fantasy Flight Games make. The Call of Cthulhu card game, this is not affecting that because they're sort of done and dusted with production on that one.
Okay. Also, the Lord of the Rings, the cooperative game,
not affecting it at all. And the Game of Thrones living card game, well, the effect is slightly different. They're effectively rebooting the entire game.
Yeah.
Right, because the card pool on that one is already so big and sort of groaning under its own weight, and I think a lot of the mechanics that they came out with at the start aren't holding up to the age of the game.
Well, I think what I read was it had become too mechanical, too many keywords, too many specialty effects for people to keep track of, and you know the rules. If you want to go into a tournament, the rules are like 25 pages.
Yeah.
And they, you know, every time they bring out a new set of cards, they have to bring out a new FAQ to discuss how various cards affect various other cards. Interestingly, though, that's already been rebooted once, though, because it was...
Has it?
It was the first of the living card games, way back before the TV series was even thought about.
Yeah.
It came out, and then they brought it out again where they changed the look of the cards. I think initially it came out as a trading card game. So they changed it. They've changed it already once, which is quite interesting.
Well, the designer Nate French has got a long, rambling essay on the interwebs if you want to go and read his excuses. My reaction to this, frankly, is that the company is going to continue to print so many cards and suck as much money out of their out of their target audience as they can that they end up breaking their own games.
Yeah.
I would rather they just say, you know what, we're going to stop that game and make something new.
Yeah.
That's what I would actually prefer to see. But no, this is about bringing new players into these games and the evolving meta game. So, look, I don't know. A minor issue unless you're going to be playing in tournaments.
Well, I mean, the whole metagame issue was one of the things, I guess, that probably drove me away from Game of Thrones because it became not about, hey, I can build a deck and you can build a deck and we can play, but what are the cards that you must defend against? What are the cards that you must have in your deck? What are the cards that everyone's guaranteed to play? What are the plots that everyone's going to be guaranteed to play? And therefore, instead of me building this fabulous deck, you know, I'm really only tweaking with 10 cards because the other 50 are like must-haves that everyone's playing with.
You're defending against the inevitable combos. Yeah. So, look, I guess this is a good way of avoiding that kind of problem, I suppose. The good news is that if you want to get into a new living card game, the new Game of Thrones card game is going to be relaunching in March next year. Okay, a couple of other really fast little bits of news because I've been crapping on for ages.
What else is new?
There's a new thank you. There's a new expansion for Dominion coming out. Everybody,
no.
Yes.
I thought that was dead.
No, everybody thought it was.
Let it die.
No, in 2015, there's going to be a big expansion for it of 400 cards.
Oh.
Okay, maybe in around May. Now, a little card game called Love Letter, the little card game that could, which is now coming out in so many different versions.
Yes.
Skinned with all these different themes, including Batman Love Letter.
Oh. I thought Loot Letter was bad enough.
I don't know what they were thinking. And talking of Milk and the Lizard, there's yet another pandemic expansion on the way called State of Emergency.
Oh.
This one actually sounds okay, though. It's another modular
one.
Yeah,
they all sound good. That's the trouble.
It's got a disease that jumps species. It's got emergency events and a super bug challenge. WizKids have gotten on board the Marvel gravy train with the launch of X-Men Mutant Revolution, which is a re-implementation of the Spartacus game, which a lot of people seem to be fans of, despite
it being surprisingly popular.
A crap TV show. Right, so it's a new way to play that mechanic. And finally, Season 3 of Tabletop starts this week. Right, Will Wheaton et al. Kicking off on the 13th, the first episode in their 1.4 million dollar Indiegogo campaign funded internet series. Some of the games they're going to be playing on tabletop this season.
The first episode, I think, is Takedo, isn't it?
I might be right there. Yes, Five Tribes is lined up. Dead of Winter, Mice and Mystics, Stone Age, Coup, Sheriff of Nottingham, Will Wheaton, the greatest ambassador that board gaming and tabletop gaming hobby has. He's back on the interwebs.
Play more games. And speaking of playing more games, here's a game I'd like to be playing. A quick ad I've got to run. I love the sound of that. That is the National I Need My Girl. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, Trent and Mark. And yes, if anyone has seen her, can they send her back?
You've just gone on the radio and said you need a girlfriend. Is that what you've just done?
I need my girl. Anyway, speaking of girls.
Yes, this is a perfect segue into two middle-class white men trying to talk about the problems that women face in nerd culture.
Yeah, hey, who better to do it? Now,
we want to talk about Gamergate.
Yeah, and look, when you said, Trent, that you wanted to talk about this, my first reaction was, no, it's just it's a recipe for disaster. It can only go wrong. But I must admit, on doing a bit of research, what I realised is that I only knew about the attacks against women side of this.
Right.
And clearly I missed the way it started.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Gamergate, we should explain. Well, I think there's a tweet that I saw somewhere along the lines of, you know, playing board games and watching Gamergate is like living next door to a house full of spiders that you know could just creep over and invade you at some point. So to explain what Gamergate actually is, I mean, this whole thing started in August of this year, and I'm not going to try and recap it all completely blow by blow, but very quickly, a video game designer by the name of Zoe Quinn, okay? a young lady.
Yep.
She was getting releasing a game and got some good reviews or what have you. And her ex-boyfriend, after she left him, accused her of sleeping with a video game journalist from the website Kotaku in order to get good coverage. Now, this, I believe, has been emphatically, undeniably proved completely false.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that, Zoe Quinn had to, you know, basically go around and talk about what is essentially no one else's business.
Yes.
Okay, who she's dating and who she's seeing. And had to sort of put all that out there. But what happened is that Miss Quinn suffered a torrent of abuse at the hands of the internet. Some of the most vile, misogynist abuse that has ever been seen on the online, and that's saying something.
Yeah, and death, even death threats.
Well,
I believe.
she got doxxed. All right, you know what doxing is?
No.
Okay, so it's where your personal details, you know, your bank account details, your address, and all that stuff gets publicly posted, and anyone who wants to rock up to your house and threaten your parents or kill your cat or whatever knows where you live. So she had to withstand all of this. And then things started to get really complicated when some other women who were involved in the video gaming industry started saying, okay, here's another case of women being picked on by white guys, or just by men, who are abusing women, who are being misogynist, who are...
And
making rape threats.
Yeah, I was going to say, not just picked on and called nasty names, but threats of rape, threats of death, you know, totally, totally, totally over the top. I mean, yes, there are some, I can't even say those words on Edge Radio, there are some fools out there, let's say, and the internet is a place where a lot of them think that they have a right to express those opinions to everyone and anyone.
It's the gift of anonymity.
Yeah, that's right, but these people have just gone way, way, way over the top.
So there's a really sort of clumsy description of what the Gamergate controversy is, and you can read all about that online to get the full story. It's essentially what's being perceived as a culture war against women within the video gaming industry. But wrapped around it is this idea of ethics in video game journalism, because one side of the argument maintains that that is what the debate is actually about.
Yes.
While the other side is saying, no, this is actually about misogyny and about if you want your video games to be treated seriously as art, they need to be critiqued seriously as art, and that includes accusations of sexism and misogyny where appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay, and some people just don't seem to like that. So are there lessons that can be drawn from this controversy for the board gaming hobby? And I maintain that there are, and it's something that I've been watching with keen interest. Mark, for you, this whole idea, you thought this was really just about ethics in reviewing and journalism.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure. And as I said, I saw those attacks. I looked up the videos of Anita Sarkeesian, who is an academic, talking about the stereotyping of women in video games in particular. And she makes some, you know, extremely valid points about the fact that, you know, often violence against women is just used as a sort of a bit of an interest thread to get the hero to go and do stuff. You know, the damsel in distress or the, revenge against the person who killed the wife or the mother or something. And she makes some really valid points. Although I tried to watch her videos and I found them very... very dry.
She's an academic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. But look, it's certainly interesting. But what about this idea that somehow developers and journalists have too cozy a relationship?
Mm.
Do you think? Let's leave video games aside for one moment. It's not a world that we inhabit, and certainly there are professional video game reviewers who are paid separately.
Yes.
To the actual development companies. Now, in board gaming, of course, we're talking about less than even 1/20th of the amount of revenue of the video games industry. So, I would tend to think that maybe, I'm not going to pretend this isn't a problem. Maybe it's a bigger problem because of that.
It is interesting because, I had often thought, an example that came to mind for me is the practice of people doing preview versions of Kickstarter projects where they get on and sort of rant about it. Now, I support Kickstarter projects just like the next people. And in fact, we have got on and talked about Kickstarter projects here.
We haven't got any kickbacks.
No, and that's the interesting thing is I didn't actually realise that a lot of those people were actually being paid for the preview. And I think when they first started being done, they didn't mention that they were being paid. And now certainly I know they do. They do say, this is a paid preview of a Kickstarter project. And I mean, I think that the dollars we're only talking about are potentially, you know, people getting paid a few hundred dollars. So it's not massive cash injections. But the fact that there weren't those disclaimers at the start, I didn't realise. I thought someone had, you know, a famous name person picked up this Kickstarter and thought, this is fantastic, I want to tell you about this.
This is the John Laws, Alan Jones cash for comment controversy. It's essentially the same ethical dilemma.
Yeah.
Do you turn around and say something positive about a game that you've been given for free by the developer? And a lot of us, you know, I mean, look, certainly you and I were doing this show because we're passionate about this hobby.
Absolutely.
And it's always in the back of our mind that when we started up, hey, maybe we'll get some free games out of this. And now the deeper I get into it, I'm kind of find myself thinking, you know what, if we are getting free games, I will feel obliged to say something nice about the person who gave it to me. But, gee, it's a double bind, isn't it?
Well, the one dilemma that I have found is when someone did send us a copy of their game.
Mm, okay.
And, you know, look, a couple of people have very small local games.
They weren't good.
Yeah, what do you do when it's absolute tripe?
And you want to say something nice about an Australian developer. You
know, and in the end, where we got to with that one was we actually didn't say anything.
We've had the same problem in reverse.
Yeah,
we're trying to find something nice to say.
You know, and look, we want to encourage, obviously, everyone and these local producers to keep producing these games because there's some fantastic ones that come out. But, you know, there are always the ones that aren't so great. But I guess I want to be free, and I'm sure you do as well, Trent, you know, to say what we feel about these games,
sure,
without being nasty.
And look, it's just something we're going to try to continue to do. I don't think anyone's going to care because, frankly, the whole thing's too, you know, the whole industry is too small for people to really care.
Yeah, look, we're a niche within a niche within a niche. That's for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, whereas video games, it is a $1 billion industry.
It's the only thing that's getting close entertainment wise to rival Hollywood.
Mm.
Now, of course, this is one side of the argument, the Gamergate. The hashtag Gamergaters are saying that that's what it's really all about ethics in journalism. But at the same time, the people that they're attacking seem to be predominantly women.
Yeah.
Okay, so why are women getting up in arms? Well, we know why women are getting up in arms as far as video games go. Do they have are women being treated fairly within board games and the depiction of them? And I would have to argue, no, they aren't. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why. Because board games have to use the same kind of visual shorthand, so they have to resort to stereotypes.
Yes.
And I guess it's lazy, and it's perpetuating those stereotypes, but it does convey a very quick kind of visual message.
Yes.
The damsel in distress, the chick in the chainmail bikini. Look, I'll tell you a really bad example of it. The box cover for Robinson Crusoe, okay, showing a whole bunch of castaways,
yes,
of various stereotypes, including a woman in, sort of pirate gear that's all been ripped into a strategically placed bikini shape. Or anything that's got like a manga type of theme with Japanese schoolgirls and stuff.
Yes.
Better
not start on those games.
There's a fair few of those. Now, look, I've just realised we're running out of time.
We are way out of time, and there's a whole bunch more to discuss.
We've
barely scratched the surface.
We've hardly scratched the surface of Gamergate. Maybe this is something we can sort of come back to.
Yeah, well, let's invite people, firstly, to hit us up on Facebook or Twitter and give us their opinions of how are women... What's the image of women in board games? How do they feel about that? Get some women to give us some input on that.
Well, yes, please. So it's not just blokes talking
about
it.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
And do you think there are lessons from hashtag Gamergate in video games that can be applied to the board gaming hobby? Please, we'd love
fabulous
to hear from you on The Dice Men Cometh.
We are The Dice Men Cometh. We're on 99.3
FM
with Edge Radio. And we're going to be back.
Just a reminder.
Yeah, we're going to be back next week. So hit us up. Tweet us, Facebook us, And we'd love to hear what you got to think. Thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you next week.
We'd love to hear what you've got to think.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
And if anyone knows a girlfriend that you know might be interested in dating,
okay, we're out of here.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.